Harriet Tubman was an American slave who escaped bondage and became a leading abolitionist in the period before the Civil War. In April of this year, the U.S. Treasury announced Harriet Tubman would replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill, marking the first time an image of a woman and an African-American will be represented on paper currency in the U.S. Joining us on the phone to discuss the life and work of Harriet Tubman is Karen Hill, president and CEO of the Tubman Home in Auburn, New York. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
And Kate Larson, who's author of Bound for the Promised Land, Harriet Tubman, Portrait of an American Hero. Welcome to you, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
So as we mentioned, Harriet Tubman has been back in the news because of plans to have her image on the U.S. $20 bill. Kate, did that announcement surprise you?
Well, not really, because it had been in the works for quite some time. But I was thrilled, and the depth of my emotion actually surprised me. It was such a tremendous relief, and I was incredibly happy and proud.
Karen, are you finding that the announcement's generating more interest in Harriet Tubman's life and work?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the announcement of Harriet being on the $20 banknote has brought a level of populism to the life and the legacy of Harriet Tubman. But we actually began at the Harriet Tubman Home seeing an increased interest in Harriet Tubman when we were named by Congress in 2014 to become a National Historical Park in honor of Harriet Tubman on her actual property in Auburn. So it's been, this was one more piece of the tremendous legacy of Harriet Tubman becoming better known to the general public.
Many of Harriet Tubman's early biographies were written by whites. How do you think that influenced what we know or don't know about her?
This is Kate. I've done a lot of research on this, and I think that one of the first biographies written about Tubman was by a white woman by the name of Sarah Bradford, who was this Victorian children's book author, and she was really not confident to write a biography of Tubman. Actually, she wasn't really confident to write a biography of anybody, but she happened to do one of Tubman. And she just did not take Tubman at her word. She changed Tubman's words. She softened her image a bit. And Sarah's own racial attitudes from the time period, which were quite racist, bled through the biography. So that's a great tragedy. And there were other people that wrote about Tubman at that time in the 19th century who were much better authors, and a couple of them were white as well, but their biographies did not come through like Sarah Bradford's did. So we've had this jaded view of Tubman since that time.
Karen, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts about that have less to do with white writing about Tubman as opposed to the hundreds and hundreds of books written basically for school-age children, a lot of children's books written, and that they are just filled with so many myths about Tubman versus the actual truth of her dynamic work during the entirety of her life. And Kate's book, Bound for the Promised Land, was like a godsend to the retelling of the Tubman story in a way that was historically accurate, which is what we need to get out into the public at the same time that they are very, very happy about the $20 banknote. There's an opportunity to learn much more about the genuine life of Tubman, which was beyond anything we could possibly have created through children's literature that's inaccurate.
Now, let's talk a little about Harriet. She was raised as a slave and, as was the case with many enslaved families, watched her family get torn apart. What happened to her family in particular, and how do you think this influenced her later work as an abolitionist?
You know, as a young child, Tubman's family was separated. Her parents were enslaved by different masters, and they were separated by about 10 miles. And the man who enslaved Tubman's mother and all of Tubman's siblings was not a very good businessman, and he was just a lousy guy, and he sold away three of Tubman's sisters, and that totally decimated the family. But they lived on the eastern shore of Maryland, where this was fairly common, that families were separated, family members were sold away, and it deeply, deeply wounded her and scarred her, and drove her during her years on the Underground Railroad to go back and rescue her family, because she just could not live without them. Her freedom meant nothing without them.
Did I read somewhere that was it Harriet's mom who tried to protect the young boy when they wanted to come in and sell the boy?
Right. Yeah. That was her brother Moses who was going to be sold, and she threatened her enslaver, Edward Brodus, with an axe if he was going to take her boy away. And Edward Brodus remarkably backed away, and the deal fell through.
So in some ways, that might have influenced Harriet to be able to feel like she could stand up at some point.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. All right. Ironically, I am here at the General Conference of the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. And one of the big things in Harriet's life was when they came together on Sunday, the family being separated during the week and coming together on Sundays, and just her faith consciousness is just a remarkable part of, I think, her legacy. And for her, faith also meant freedom. Mm-hmm. So I think that just even though the family was so decimated in so many ways, and separated, that ability to come together once a week really meant something to her and really carried her through as she went to the North and came back, you know, to help her family free itself from slavery along the Eastern Shore of Maryland.
Now, as a slave, she suffered some pretty severe injuries. What were some of the abuses that she suffered?
As a child, from the age of 6 years old on, she was beaten pretty badly, quite often by temporary masters that she had been hired out to. And then as a young teen, when she was about 13 years old, she was nearly killed when an overseer threw an iron weight at another enslaved man, but it hit Tubman instead and crushed her skull. And she had a nearly fatal head injury that she suffered from the effects of that for the rest of her life.
Mm. I was reading that she was in charge of a baby, and when the baby cried, she'd be whipped.
Yeah, it's tragic. She was just 6 years old, and, she'd have to rock the baby, and as soon as the baby cried, the mother would come down hard with a whip, and the scars from those whippings at 6 years old were still visible on her neck when she died at the age of 91.
Wow. Harriet Tubman's father was eventually freed from slavery upon the death of his owner, but that didn't really change circumstances of his life. Explain why.
His family was still enslaved, and he could not leave them. In fact, he was interviewed at one point, and he said that he would never leave the Eastern Shore of Maryland until all of his children were free. So he became an Underground Railroad agent and helped Tubman and many others escape to freedom so that his family could find, have liberty. So he was a great role model as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the whole way the African-American male in slavery has been treated is quite... it's perplexing because, Kate, correct me if I'm wrong, John Tubman was born a free man, Harriet's first husband, and her family separated. They separated when she sought her own freedom. So here you have Harriet's father staying until all of his family is free, and here you have John Tubman, who was married to Harriet, who didn't have that ability, that emotional ability to understand how important it was for Harriet to also be free.
Right.
Hmm. Kate, you've written about the blended community of free blacks and slaves in the South. How did that community interact, and how was it instrumental in the creation of the Underground Railroad?
Well, this is specific to the Chesapeake region and the Upper South. It was much larger free black communities in the Upper South. And in Maryland in particular, and on the Eastern Shore, practically every black family was a blended family of free and enslaved members. So it was this strange kind of or difficult dichotomy. But it was really important because the free black members of families could travel and they could get resources and they could make connections and help with someone like Tubman who wanted to escape. And it's also a fact of life in the Chesapeake region, this black maritime world that was crucial to connecting disparate communities and families that had been broken apart. The communication network that formed around this black maritime world was incredibly important to Tubman as she matured into a young woman and was able to capture that information and the resources that that community had and would tap into it time and time again during her years on the Underground Railroad.
What do we know about Harriet's escape from slavery? Was there a particular incident that pushed her to flee?
Her enslaver, Edward Brodus, died, and his wife was deeply in debt. She had six minor children at home, and so she had set about the process of selling all of Tubman's family, and that was the impetus for Tubman to leave.
How did she escape, and what kind of help did she have along the way?
She took off first with her two brothers, Henry and Ben, but they became confused about which way to go. A lot of people don't understand how many times people tried to flee on the Underground Railroad, but they didn't know where to go or who to get help from. And so they returned. But then Tubman said, I just can't do this. I need to be free. I'm afraid to be sold. So she took off on her own. And she told someone that it was a white woman living near her who helped her on the first leg and gave her instructions on the next steps along the Underground Railroad that was alive and well on the eastern shore of Maryland into Delaware and into Philadelphia that helped Tubman escape.
So she ends up in Philadelphia. What was life like for African Americans in the city at that time?
Philadelphia had the largest black population in the country at the time, so freedom seekers like Tubman could blend in very easily and hide out sort of in plain sight. So she was able to work and raise enough money so she could return to the Eastern Shore to rescue her family.
So even though Pennsylvania was a free state, there were risks that Harriet and other escaped slaves, they could be found, forced to return to the South and their owners. So it was still very dangerous.
It was incredibly dangerous. And after the passage of the Fugitive Slave Act in 1850, which gave legal authority to slaveholders and their minions to go to the North and grab people off the street, Harriet Tubman moved her family members and people she rescued to Canada. And then in the late 1850s, she purchased a home in Auburn, New York. William Henry Seward sold her a piece of property where she could settle her family. And Auburn had this dynamic black and white abolitionist community that protected Tubman and freedom seekers like her. And her home is there today for people to visit. Hmm.
Some of the first slaves that Harriet Tubman helped to freedom were her own family members, but not all wanted to stay or come to the North. What were some of the reasons slaves chose to remain in the South?
Simple family, people that they loved. You know, to leave people behind was the most difficult decision anyone could make. And that's why people who could flee often did not, because that meant leaving behind loved ones. You know, if we all had to make that decision today, I think most of us would choose to remain with our families, because bringing families away and children away was nearly impossible. So the risks were too great.
Karen, you want to add any thoughts to that?
Well, when you talked about Harriet going to Philadelphia, I think you cannot escape talking about her time on Cape May, where she worked in the hospitality industry and really raised the money to finance her campaign. I mean, I think that gets overlooked, that Harriet Tubman, in addition to being this great navigator with the assistance of others, she also had to be very entrepreneurial, working and saving her money, because these campaigns needed to be financed as she went back into along the eastern shore of Maryland. And the resort industry along Cape May in New Jersey actually helped her tremendously.
Yeah. Kate, could you explain the mechanics of the Underground Railway? Were there different routes and stops, and did those within the Underground Railway communicate with one another?
The Underground Railroad was a vast network, and there were separate networks across the country that operated independent of each other. I think rarely did they connect with each other. There were specific routes and places that were well established, and sometimes a new route would pop up and then disappear depending on the people that were involved in the movement. People don't understand that the pathways to freedom had been in existence since the early 1700s or late 1600s when enslaved people were first here, and they just emerged and then disappeared and emerged in different places depending on the people that were part of the networks. And when Tubman fled in 1849, she tapped into a very healthy, very active underground network that had many trails to it leading out of the eastern shore of Maryland into Delaware and into Philadelphia at the time. And she added to that network with her own family members and friends who participated, like her father and others. So it was always morphing and always changing.
We're talking about the life and work of Harriet Tubman with Kate Larson, author of Bound for the Promised Land, Harriet Tubman, Portrait of an American Hero, and Karen Hill, president and CEO of the Tubman Home in Auburn, New York. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the life and work of Harriet Tubman with Karen Hill, president and CEO of the Tubman Home in Auburn, New York, and Kate Larson, author of Bound for the Promised Land, Harriet Tubman, Portrait of an American Hero. What were some of the precautions they took while traveling on the Underground Railroad, and how long was a typical journey?
Secrecy, of course, was vital to traveling on the Underground Railroad and staying hidden. And sometimes, that was easier than other times. Some safe houses were more secure than others. Sometimes just hiding in a culvert or under a train trestle were the only options. It took a lot of money for Tubman to rescue people. It was anywhere from $30 to $100 per rescue mission. So when she was not traveling down to the Eastern Shore, she was trying to raise money or save money, and as Karen said, in the hospitality industry. And once she settled in the North, she traveled throughout Central New York and gave speeches, and she would collect money so that she could finance trips. Because she had to bribe people, she needed train tickets or boat tickets, she needed food and medicine and clothing. So it was expensive. It was not cheap.
Yeah. Harriet Tubman's been described as immune to the fears, risks, and dangers that made many others wary to do similar work. Do you think that's part of the reason she was so successful? And where do you think she got that fearlessness and drive?
Kate and I have been in meetings where this has been discussed even more broadly. But I feel very strongly that her faith factor was... that was an intrinsic value in Tubman, and that her faith fueled a lot of the fearlessness. And she challenged systems. You know, it was in her DNA. I mean, she was born to challenge systems from the time that she was, you know, a child. And she often said that when she had those spells that were a consequence of her being hit by that iron instrument, that those were the times that she communed with God. I mean, her faith really kind of led her to her freedom. And I think it's not a coincidence that she tried lots of different denominations, but she ultimately attached herself to the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, which is known historically as the Freedom Church, because her faith factor says, I want to be free.
Mm. Kate, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I agree with Karen. I think, you know, it's sometimes hard for us today, or for me anyway, to understand the depths of her faith. She gave herself up to her faith. She believed that God would guide her, and whatever would happen, it was his decision, and this is how she lived her life. I would add with that is that I think she was also born a genius. She was a brilliant human being, and even though she didn't have, she could not read or write, she had this incredible brilliance about her and genius, so that she could read a landscape. She could read people. She could read the sky and the water. She could read those things and understand and help. Those things helped her navigate her paths to freedom. So I think the combination of her intense faith and trust in God and this great genius that she had created this incredible human being.
Now, New Bedford was part of the Underground Railroad, and are there connections between Dorchester County, Maryland, where Tubman grew up, and New Bedford? You mentioned earlier the maritime kind of connection.
This is what's really exciting about this story is, yes, there were people who fled from Dorchester County using maritime connections. They sailed away on a boat, and they ended up in New Bedford. So there was a small community of formerly enslaved people and free people who traveled to New Bedford, and they lived there, they worked there on the waterfront, and they were a source of resources, a place to hide. And Tubman actually spent some time in New Bedford. She knew these people, and while she did not bring people there herself, she knew of that network, and it's really an exciting story.
Yeah. Now, Harriet Tubman served in the Union Army during the Civil War, and in fact was the first woman to lead an armed expedition into war. So tell us more about her role in the Union Army.
She's so incredible. You know, I just love her because she just did everything she needed to do to defeat slavery. Her war on slavery extended from the day she was born right through the Civil War as a spy, as a soldier, as a nurse, as a cook, anything she had to do. And yes, she is credited with being the first woman to conduct an armed raid. She partnered with Colonel James Montgomery. He was the leader of the 2nd South Carolina Colored Volunteers, and they sailed up the Combahee River in June of 1863, and based on intelligence that she had gotten from spies and from infiltrating into the countryside, information about what was out there, where the torpedoes were in the river, etc., and they had an extraordinarily successful campaign, and they burned down plantations, liberated 750 people, and she was incredibly valued by the generals and officers in the Union Army, and she had access to any of their offices whenever she wanted to, and that's extraordinary for a petite, formerly enslaved African-American woman at the time. Yeah. And after the raid, there was an article in the newspapers that went nationwide that talked about it, and they called her the Black She Moses. That's
yeah,
remarkable.
I mean, I think that's the thing, is that Colonel Montgomery was in awe of Harriet Tubman. I mean, he just could not, they would not have been successful in that campaign if Tubman hadn't done the work that she did. And if you stand along the banks of the Combahee River, and I know Kate and I both had our opportunities to do that, you just are in awe of the fact that she freed 750 plus people. It's just incredible. And I think what's interesting is that there's where the Combahee River is located, and just to bring things forward to today's context, you know, it was along State Route 17, it considered the most dangerous road in the United States, according to the Department of Transportation. And two different counties, Colleton County and Beaufort County, that have their struggles with race relations. And then you have, if you think about how Harriet was able to bring these counties together around some very important social issues, and they've now created a bridge, and they've renamed parts of the riverbank in her honor, people use her today. And I think that that's what's really important, is to get to the part of the story about how Harriet's legacy fueled a lot of the ability to address social justice issues. And just to know that she was in the deepest part of the South and freed 750, hoping that these slaves, many of them, would join the Union Army and take up the cause. That was really, you know, the United States, the impetus for wanting to free them. But Harriet doing that has served a larger purpose.
Yeah. Talk about the farm in Auburn. This became the gathering point for her family. And given how important family was to her, this must have given her great joy. Describe her later years in Auburn.
It's actually 31 and a half acres is the homestead site. It's 25 acres, which she bought at auction, plus the 7 acres. So it's an assemblage. So let's talk about how this woman, who was really a genius, had the ability to put an assemblage together. Let's talk about how she got an extension of credit that allowed her to do that. Let's talk about how she used the site not only for family, but for the broader community, having established on the site the John Brown Hall, which was an infirmary that cared for all people, provided free universal health care services. And what we have today from that are a part of a collection of over 60,000 archaeological artifacts that tell us the types of medicines that were dispensed in the 19th century. And what quantities and who got what. So we have, you know, we've got all that catalog. Let's talk about how she understood the importance of allowing people to age in place in dignity and in grace. She established a home for the aged on the site, a series of 9 cottages, one of which remains today and is a house museum, because the home for the aged that existed in Auburn was segregated. So even in this place of a very fertile abolitionist movement in Central New York, segregation was still very much something that had to be confronted. Let's talk about how she allowed her home itself to be used for a period of time as a shelter for women and children who came out of abusive situations, and how she cared for those persons who were sickly. In fact, her second husband, Nelson Davis, was really someone who was a boarder in her house, whom she cared for, whom she ultimately married, who predeceased her. Let's talk about her entrepreneurial work, her having the kiln on her property, where she was able to fire the bricks that graced so many of the historic residences along South Street in Auburn, and the fruits and vegetables that she gave to the community and to school children for doing great. And right now on the site, it's essentially remains very much the way it did during Tubman's time, with our being very steadfast in our preservation of the site. We are propagating the remaining apple trees from the orchard so that we can be able to offer a Tubman variety apple. And we hope to be able to do more of what we need to do with the natural cultural landscape on the site. Mm-hmm. When you step onto the site, however, I think it's really important that people come and feel it for themselves, because you feel that you are in a hallowed space. Mm-hmm. You feel the energy of Harriet. You feel the energy of Harriet as she dealt with so many humanitarian issues of her time that are still very relevant today.
Yeah, she was an amazing woman for sure. And Kate, what do you hearing what Karen is saying about the legacy of Harriet, what do you think people will be saying 50 years from now about Harriet Tubman?
They will be considering her an American patriot, just like, you know, George Washington and Paul Revere and all of them, that she will be part of this pantheon of diverse historical characters that will grace our monuments around the country, our currency, and more. And it's, I think, Tubman, she was always a pathbreaker, and now with having her, you know, going to be on our currency and 2 national parks in her honor, I think that she is the pathbreaker, and we'll look back on this pathbreaker who helped create a more diverse contemporary understanding of our American past that's more than just the white guys, that it's men and women of all colors and backgrounds. but she's the first.
Yeah, and she, of course, she was recognized for her work as an abolitionist before her death. There's a famous image of her wearing a white shawl given to her by Queen Victoria of England in recognition of her work. How do you think her image has evolved since her death?
I feel that her image is very different now. You see, I remember, quite frankly, when they had the public unrest in Baltimore following the death of Freddie Gray, for instance. And you saw, I think on Aborted at CVS, you saw someone drew a peace symbol, and then they had like Harriet Tubman next to the peace symbol. It's as if somebody was saying, you know, we've got to deal with the things that go beneath the surface of what's wrong here in our urban situation. And Tubman is someone whose spirit should be our guidepost in how we confront those issues. I would hope that having these two parks, one along the East Shore of Maryland and one in Auburn, New York, that will encourage people to look more deeply into the life of Tubman. We don't have very many parks that take us from cradle to the grave, and this will be the first of its kind. You know, what made her life so unique? And I think she was able to speak very forcefully to both the cause of freedom for people of color, for African Americans, and the cause of freedom for white women. That's how she became involved in the suffragist movement. And there are not very many people, even today, and we see it today with all the unrest that's going on in our country now, there are not enough people who can speak with clarity why one doesn't have to lose in order for the other party to gain. Mm-hmm. And Harriet understood that in a way that no one else during her time truly understood that. Frederick Douglass, who was one of her dearest friends, you know, wrote in a letter, and I'm really paraphrasing, he basically said how he had all this very public acclaim and applause and had met with people at the highest levels of our national government and had been rewarded in such ways for that tremendous work that he had as our national orator for the cause of freedom. But that Harriet had none of that, none of that. Yet, if she had not done the work that she did, he would not have had the ability to speak with such forcefulness about his own work, because she provided the empirical evidence of the core value of freedom. Mm-hmm. And so I think the challenge before us today as a nation and as a society is really to examine what is freedom today, mm-hmm. and how do we get there.
Yeah. Kate, you get the final word.
I agree with everything that Karen just said, and I think that Tubman's image has been, and her story has been used over, you know, 150 years in different ways and by different groups of people. And I just know that her story and its richness and intensity will carry us forward into the future, into a better future, which is what she dreamed of every single day of her life. Yeah.
You'll both be on Martha's Vineyard on Saturday, August 13th, for a brunch and lecture about Harriet Tubman, sponsored by the Harlem Fine Arts Show. We'll post a link with more information about the lecture at our website, capeandislands.org. Karen Hill, president and CEO of the Tubman House, and Kate Larson, author of Bound for the Promised Land, Harriet Tubman, Portrait of an American Hero. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.